You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 14th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live between Abraham Lincoln's two ficus trees, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Abraham Lincoln wouldn't do the between two ferns, but he might do between two ficus trees.
Yeah. Abraham Lincoln was a rhino, you know. I've heard that.
Some people say Abraham Lincoln was a rhino.
Some people say the founder of the Republican Party was a Republican in name only. Really? Really? You're that far gone? Really?
Yeah,
you're
that, they're that far gone.
You're that brain dead.
And I got to say, they did fool us because you thought that the picture of Bill O'Reilly saying Lincoln wouldn't have done this Zach yeah. Galifianakis show. You yeah. said, that's got to be a Photoshop.
Yeah, sure. Because, you know, first of all, Lincoln was funny.
He was funny.
Lincoln famously used humor to get his point across. Second, Lincoln would talk in front of anybody. Lincoln would stand up in front of five people and give a speech. He would go anywhere to deliver a message.
That's why he's a Republican in name only, because he's yeah. just like Clinton.
Third, Bill O'Reilly wrote a book about Lincoln. So I'm thinking, I understand that modern Republicans are humorless, vicious, gut-fighting automata who have no sense of humor. Therefore, they don't understand it when they see it or understand its utility or facility when it comes to delivering your message. But the idea that you would take the founder of your party, mm-hmm. who was renowned throughout history for his tall tales, his sense of humor, and his willingness to engage in a humorous way to make his fucking point and say that he wouldn't do a thing like this, is so completely and perfectly conservative, mm-hmm. is so completely in line with the history is really inconvenient for modern conservatives. So we'll just shake that Etch-a-Sketch and make it go away. But I couldn't believe they'd actually go and actually unperson Abraham Lincoln and turn him into, you know, Rush Limbaugh.
Well, they kind of have to.
They really do.
You know, because slavery.
Yeah. That came up too this week, didn't it?
Yeah, it sure did. You want to talk about that?
Judge Napolitano, quote unquote, Judge Napolitano. This was really quite wonderful to watch. I have the link up at my blog. It's all over the place. You don't need to go to my blog to see it. But it was, you have to sort of take a running jump at the reason why Anthony Napolitano, Judge Anthony Napolitano, regular Fox contributor, is one of the many, many, many conservatives you probably know who have bizarre theories about the Civil War. It wasn't caused by slavery. It could have been resolved if we just bought slaves out of slavery. Because ideologically, this is really important to understand, ideologically, they have to believe that.
Yeah.
Because it can't be true that basically the great grandfathers of their Republican base were a bunch of slaveholding assholes or who went to war to defend slaveholding assholes. And that is simply not an America they can
Well, also, let's face it, the slaveholders are the real victims here.
They always are.
That really is Napolitano's point, is that Lincoln
it was Lincoln's
could
war.
Have done something nicer.
He started, Lincoln started, according to Napolitano, Lincoln started the Civil War.
Yep.
And it could have been resolved with a bunch
purpose,
of...
On because purpose. Because he hated the South. Yeah.
And the reason it was started was blah, 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 and had something to do with tariffs. And by the way, Lincoln...
Also, slavery would have died on its own. The Southerners would have ended slavery eventually anyway.
And,
no!
And the reason you have to keep... And this is why Michelle Bachmann famously said, you know, the founders of the Constitution worked their lives entirely. They worked tirelessly for the rest of their lives until slavery was no more.
Yeah.
But are you insane? No, you're a Republican.
Yeah.
And so you have been bred in this tiny little terrarium full of bullshit that you actually believe. This is the, as I refer to them, the tribe that rubs shit in its hair. Yeah. They among themselves swap these ludicrous stories that have nothing, that are very Stalinist in a way, because they have nothing to do with science or fact or history. They have to do with, okay, since our ideology is correct, history must be thus. Since our Southern white, aggrieved, angry, male, bigoted base mm-hmm. needs to believe that the South never rose up, that there was never a real civil war, that it was all the North's fault, we have to reverse engineer all of history to make those morons happy, because without them, we have no election. So you end up having these bizarre theological spin-offs of what is essentially an incredibly stupid, wrong-headed, denialist version of history. Or essentially they do to history what they do to climate change. It just can't be true because it's inconvenient for it to be true, and I'm going to pretend it's not true. And the problem, they always run into problems when they go on camera with someone who's not a fellow Fox ass sniffer and say this shit out loud. So Jon Stewart had Napolitano on The Daily Show, and they had a little game called The Weakest Lincoln. And yes. He had a panel of history professors, and Napolitano kept saying shit. They kept saying, that never happened. That's not true. That's not how it worked. And he just got the shit slapped out of him. Mm-hmm. Now, the sad part is it's not going to change his opinion. It's not going to change his mind at all. It will change no one who believes that the bullshit has been coming out of his mouth at all. This is what Christopher Hayes said this week on his show. This is a sad but true. This is one of those facts that we as liberals have to come to terms with if we want to sort of move forward in a sense of understanding the battlefield we're in. Chris Hayes, who is a journalist, was going through the whole Affordable Care Act mm-hmm. thing. This woman who just wouldn't believe, and we're going to get to her in a minute, who just refused to believe the facts as were presented to her. And he had on his show a gentleman whose name, Brian Nyhan, I believe, or Brendan Nyhan. I'm doing this from memory, so my apologies. But it was essentially his research and Chris Hayes' experience says exposing people to the facts does squat. Mm-hmm, it mm-hmm. doesn't change their mind at all. It makes them dig their heels in harder. That's something that we as liberals have a real hard time accepting because it changes the tempo and direction of the battle that we have to fight if we want to win. Because we keep deluding ourselves that if we just line our words up like a rail gun and fire them off, you know, as brilliantly and as eloquently, and I'm as guilty as anybody of doing this because I try to be eloquent and brilliant. That it's going to change things, and it doesn't. It reinforces our own position. It sort of gives people the proper vocabulary to carry with them in the world to defend themselves. But the fantasy that you're ever going to talk Napolitano out of believing the Civil War was caused by the North, or you're going to talk this woman out of believing the Affordable Care Act is actually going to kill her, mm-hmm. or you're going to talk people into believing that climate change isn't a hoax, means you don't understand conservatism. They can't believe those things. Those things have to be not true or else their entire life is meaningless. So they just look at you and whisk you away and talk about liberals and both sides do it and the conversation peters out. So that's where we stand right now.
Well, and I wanted to just get back to Napolitano's argument for just a minute.
Uh-huh.
That his argument is that slave trade had already died out. It was banned and so forth. And England had banned it. And we had stopped importing slaves, although slave ships were still found on the Atlantic time and time again, being snuck into the United States.
Right.
But the fact is that a lot of Southerners wanted to stop importing slaves because it made their slaves in the South more valuable.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you can raise your own, so to speak. You know, the slave population in the United States, I believe, is the only one that actually reproduced itself in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is the availability of food. And I mean, there's a lot of social history that goes on in Southern history to discuss why Southern slavery was different, for instance, from Egyptian slavery.
Yeah, from every other kind of slavery. Yeah.
Right. It's farming, you know, and it's not really, really dangerous. They didn't use slaves to load dynamite onto ships. They used the Irish.
They used the Irish to do that because the Irish were cheaper.
Slaves were valuable.
Right.
And Irish were worthless. So,
yeah.
You know, this
well, and there are other forms.
Economic
and this is
decision on the part of the South to go along with the official stopping of importing slaves. So this idea that slavery was dying on its own is just BS.
It's ludicrous. And it's also really important to understand that, I mean, there are all kinds of different slavery. That's probably a different show. There, you know, one of the earliest recorded slave cases of slavery that I know about was Roman,
mm-hmm.
where you bought yourself out of slavery.
Yeah, yeah. It was temporary.
It was a temporary thing.
And the whole founding of the United States is based on, I mean, the white founding of the United States. People don't realize that the way that poor people got over to this country in large numbers was indentured servitude.
Yeah.
6 years. You worked for someone who paid your way over to the United States. You worked as an intern or learning a trade for 6 years, and then you were supposed to be released. And people escaped from that.
Yeah.
due to mistreatment all the time. If you look at newspapers from Benjamin Franklin's era, there are ads seeking to recover an escaped worker who's supposed to work for me for five more years.
Uh-huh.
You know, but they run away. Servants.
Wasn't it Jacob whose brother sold him into slavery?
Yeah, yeah.
See, eventually you turn up as an advisor to Pharaoh. So there is that upside. So
that's the upside of slavery. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Judge Napolitano.
And it was also the case that in order to have this kind of domestic chattel slavery, mm-hmm. where you had an entire race of people treated as domestic animals, mm-hmm. you had to evolve an entire ideology, an entire worldview, an entire biblical interpretation,
including a form of Christianity. Exactly.
You had to pervert Christianity, you had to pervert capitalism, you had to pervert science, you had to keep bending everything about the world that was supposed to be good and pure or noble or higher or what have you to serve your despicable institution. You had to believe God made people inferior to you, therefore it was okay to do it. And once that became the case, that became the foundation, then not only was it okay to do it, it was noble to do mm-hmm. it. It was yeah. righteous to do yeah. it. And you see that kind of absolute certitude, that absolute, what I call Christopath certitude, mm-hmm. running straight from slavery to Brown versus the Board of Education to Loving versus Virginia to gay
to
rights.
Michelle Bachmann.
To
absolutely.
Michelle Bachmann.
Yep.
It was a straight lineal relationship between the modern conservative movement and those people, which is why they can't break faith with the past. They have to keep rewriting it to pretend it didn't happen the way it did. The problem, of course, is that everybody from Stevens all the way down to every state that the vice president of the Confederacy, all the way down to every state that seceded, left documents, the Articles of Secession, that said explicitly the reason we're quitting is because of slavery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And because slavery is absolutely necessary for our economy. Slavery is a noble Christian institution. Slavery is a great thing, and future generations will thank us for doing this. Mm-hmm. So Napolitano and people like him have to expend an enormous amount of energy lying to themselves constantly. And once you've built your life around defending an indefensible and atrocious lie, that's all you do. You have.
So let's switch and talk about Daryl Issa now.
Yeah. On a completely different subject.
No, not at all.
No.
I posted to our Facebook page today document described, the website Scribd has a copy of the actual IRS letter that was sent out, and this particular one went to a Tea Party group, Richmond Tea Party, asking, this is the whole source of the IRS investigation, is this letter went out to this Tea Party group asking for more information in response to their request for tax-exempt status. This is the crux of the investigation.
You got a letter. Now, let's be clear about it. You got a letter from the government asking for more information before it gave you taxes. That's it.
That's it.
It didn't kick your door
and
down.
You requested it.
Yes.
And Stephen Colbert has proven that for this particular status for Tea Party groups, they didn't have to ask for it from the IRS.
Right. But,
so,
but
because
it was,
the law is so lax.
It went out. And this is what directly caused by Citizens United. Suddenly yeah. there are hundreds of groups all applying for tax exempt status. The IRS is overwhelmed. The Republican appointee at the IRS has said, no, this was just a method. This is
in
how
Ohio,
we dealt with
in yeah. Ohio.
This is how we dealt with this massive influx of sudden requests. We didn't have the staff for it, so we had to figure out a way to filter it. And the best we could come up with was look for these words and these sorts of. And the only thing that would happen to you if you made this request was you get a letter asking for more documentation. No jackboots on the stairs.
Well,
nobody seizing your guns.
And the tip is, it is not in accordance with the tax exempt status that you pay for an elected candidate for an election.
Uh-huh.
You can't be specifically supporting a candidate in an election.
Yep.
Working for that candidate, fundraising for that candidate. If you are doing any X, Y, and Z for a specific candidate, human being,
right?
Then you cannot have tax exempt status.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, and that's how these groups have skirted around this issue is by making all these ads that are informational about Obamacare. Yes. You know, this bad congressman voted in favor of Obamacare. So we think you should know that. And right. That's the informational part of it.
Right.
that then allows you to have this status of, no, oh, no, we're just educating the public. We're not endorsing one candidate or another.
But
obviously they are.
All these tri-corner hat wearing imbeciles who wept and screamed and tore their clothing.
Well, one in particular went before Congress and had a weepy fit. And the Democratic congressman on the committee, this was Paul Ryan's committee, he called her, you know, she drove up. I am absolutely positive she drove up from Alabama in a Cadillac Escalade.
Yeah.
And stood before the Congress with a perfect manicure, crying about how the tyrannical government was stepping on her toes.
Asked her for two more pieces of paper.
Right. And that's, they were asking for, and there's nothing, this letter is the letter. There's nothing in there that says, who are you for? Or what is it that you believe in? There's nothing in there. It's who works for you? Who do you work for?
Right.
What does your newsletter look like? We need to see your newsletter. We need to see your website. And we're going to look at these things and see if you are actually endorsing candidates.
But that was
enough. Because if you are, we can't give you the status.
Now, if this had happened under a Republican president, nothing would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been business as usual. Some people might have gotten a harsh letter from constituents. That's it. But because we need to find a new way to hate Barack Obama every month, this turned into the most grave threat to the republic in history. And another example of the jackbooted tyranny of the liberal communist.
It makes a lady cry. Right.
It never was that.
It's Daryl Issa continually bringing it up. And the reason we're bringing it up is it's news this week.
Right.
Because Daryl Issa brought before his committee the woman from another white woman. It's really interesting how this is one white woman over another. Uh-huh. Bringing before his committee Lois Lerner. And she again had to plead the fifth, even though she was willing to testify, given immunity from prosecution and certain other things. And actually, apparently her attorney was willing to provide the information that the committee wanted.
Yes.
As if to say, look, these are the answers she would give if you gave immunity.
Right.
And that was the whole point, was nothing was actually being hidden from this committee.
No.
And they have the letter anyway.
Because no laws were broken.
Everybody has the letter. You could see what happened. And so there was a fascinating exchange on the Chris Hayes show about Daryl Issa that I wanted to highlight. John Nichols from The Nation was talking with Chris Hayes, and John Nichols said that when Daryl Issa came in and was going to be the head of this committee,
it was suggested he
was going to be an incredible powerhouse. He would do 7 hearings a week, times 40 weeks. This would be the busiest committee. His basic assumption from the start was there was so much scandal in the Obama administration that you basically just had to cast your net and things would turn up immediately. And what happened very, very quickly is that, you know, he had trouble finding scandal.
Because there wasn't any.
At least not at the level he was hoping for.
Right. He wanted impeachable stuff.
Then he started watching television.
Yeah.
Fox News.
Yeah.
Looking for people speculating about scandal.
Wouldn't it be interesting?
Then he would go and investigate it.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
And John Nichols said, I think one of the most egregious examples, the one that I always go back to, is when there was the Wisconsin uprising in 2011 and Scott Walker was very much in the news. Daryl Issa brought Scott Walker to Washington to testify before the committee on the oversight of the federal government about labor problems in the state.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Yeah. What? Why is
and
that?
Chris Hayes said, right. That is why we here make this joke about him co-producing with Fox News. And Chris Hayes talks about himself then and says, look, I personally, Chris Hayes, comment and produce a television show, and I have producers helping me produce a television show every day. We are always looking for tape, and it's like Daryl Issa is over there figuring out what tape would look good on Fox News. It would look great, he says, if we got Lois Lerner in front of the cameras again to plead the fifth.
Exactly.
That would be a great piece of tape. They could lead off with it tonight, and it's fresh and new, and then, of course, we're talking about it. There's no point in having a woman who's already come before you and plead the fifth being brought in to plead the fifth again unless you need a new piece of tape to run and lead off with tonight. So that brings me to John Shimkus. John Shimkus is our former congressman, congressman from Cole, right?
Yep.
And I'm still on his newsletter list. God bless him.
Uh-huh.
He sends me his taxpayer-funded electronic newsletter.
Thank God for franking privileges.
Yeah, and you get, and you know, sending an email doesn't cost as much as mailing a letter, I guess. But he sends out this newsletter every week or every other week, and very often it will have high school student of the week or congressional art contest with a local high school student who won something, or I went to visit, you know, the Lions and they gave me this award, and he'll have a little photo of him with some old guy, you know, and little local news things about what he's doing in the district. But this newsletter from the past 2 weeks just really struck me as being exactly what Daryl Issa is doing and how, and the roundabout way Republicans can behave.
Well, it's I mean, we'll get to this in just a second, but it's a reciprocating engine.
Yeah, it is. It's a reciprocating engine, and it's within the bubble of Fox News Republicanism.
Uh-huh.
Perfectly. The title of his email was House Takes Aim at IRS Targeting of Conservative Organizations. And I saw that email and I went, oh, this is going to be good. Now, he couldn't just, using taxpayer money, quote Daryl Issa on Fox and say, I'm, you know, we're all just outraged about the IRS. No, what he had to do was help to introduce and support three separate bills introduced in the House to rein in the Internal Revenue Service and protect American taxpayers. This legislation, notice, it's legislation, uh-huh, comes in response to the IRS's widespread targeting of conservative and Tea Party groups, first documented in a 2013 report.
Uh-huh.
We don't see the letter. We don't see that this is a non-issue, that it was also sent to liberal groups.
It's not necessary to mention those things.
None.
That's just editorial freedom right there.
Right. And so what he does in this newsletter, rather than rehearse in a direct way the propaganda, there are three bills in the House now that he can report on, and he's just reporting on legislation that he supports, including H.R. 2531, the Protecting Taxpayers from Intrusive IRS Requests Act.
That's a great title, don't you think? Protecting you from those bastards at the IRS bill acts of figure. Yeah.
Also, H.R. 3865, the Stop Targeting of Political Beliefs by the IRS Act of 2014.
Yeah, which is just actually a subsection of the Quit Hurting America Act, you bastard.
Yeah.
And so forth. That's how bills are named now. So that's how it goes.
And, you know, never mind that they've, now it's 50 times that they voted to repeal Obamacare.
Uh-huh.
This is your Congress at work, is introducing bills that they can then report on to their constituents, using taxpayer money,
yes,
to perpetuate a lie,
yeah,
about a phony scandal that gets them reelected.
Well, if they're very lucky, because if this all sounds familiar, if you're all doing whatever you're doing on Friday or Saturday or Sunday, and you're wondering, where have I heard this story before? Where have I heard this kind of plot line before?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just remind you, The American Spectator, mm-hmm, Richard Mellon Scaife,
yep,
and Bill Clinton.
Yep.
You have a crackpot right-wing billionaire.
Or two.
Or two. Paying a magazine, a shill, an absolute right-wing shill of a magazine, to make up stories about Clinton because they hate Clinton. Go through every backwater tavern, every rumor, and report it all as fact with giant headlines. Then you keep banging away because you have an infinite supply of money. You keep going on CNN and you go on as many media sources as you can, decrying the fact that the mainstream media refuses to report the truth about Bill Clinton. Then you have the same people who are being paid by the billionaire to pretend to be reporters. He is also paying to pretend to be elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
So now the inside guys start conducting witch hunts based on the speculation that he has invented out of whole cloth in the magazine that he owns.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are now conducting witch hunts to find a reason to impeach Bill Clinton feed back into the magazine, who can then say, aha, mm-hmm, you see, this is Dick Cheney quoting the New York Times.
Yes, yes, right.
Even the liberal New York Times believes, yeah, in the leak you gave them, in the reporter, in the mold you had there. So this kind of circle jerk where the fascist media and the fascist political party of America act hand in glove to either just fundraise or to get the vote out, or if there's a guy in the White House with a D after his name, find a way to impeach him. If you have to make something up, make something up. And just keep at it and at it and at it, repeating it over and over again, knowing that tens of millions of Americans will continue to keep their head up your ass and think they're hearing the news.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it works. And it works. The thing is, it works really well. You have to get enough people in this country who will voluntarily lobotomize themselves, because the alternative is so frightening to them that, holy shit, I've been voting for fascists my entire life.
And so that brings us to Julie Boonstra, who is the woman in Michigan with cancer, and we wish her continued healing and safety and long life.
Yeah.
But she refuses to believe that Obamacare is saving her $1,200 a year.
Even if you do the math in front of her, she won't believe it because her ideology will not permit her to believe it.
And I told her, I wrote in a comment that she should send $1,200 to us and just put Obamacare tax on the memo line. And to make her feel better, we would cash that check every year.
Absolutely. Now, we won't tell her it'll be a down payment on a van.
No, we won't tell her.
But, you know, but you can just send that money to us. If it's imaginary, you don't need it and you don't want it anyway.
Well, and that's the thing that really got me was finding out that she and her husband had bought a gold plan from Blue Cross. Uh-huh. I was just, it was so unaffordable. I'm going to die because I can't afford health insurance. And then she had options for buying cheaper plans and took the most expensive one, you know. And, of course, how much is she being paid to appear in these Koch Brothers ads?
Well, that's a really good and it might be nothing.
Yeah.
Because there's so many willing, you know, useful idiots willing.
That's the thing. But the thing is, too, those willing idiots, first of all, so many of them are white women.
Useful idiots. Yeah.
Useful idiots. Yeah. I was thinking about Katie, what's her name?
Katie Abrams.
The amazing line, I don't want to live in Russia.
That's right. I don't want to live in Russia.
She says now because Putin's so awesome.
Well, and Katie Abrams, the reason we occasionally revisit her is because, first of all, you did an awesome video of her.
I did. But also, you know, she still has a job with others. She works for Americans for Prosperity.
She does.
As their social media director, which means she sends tweets for...
Literally will tweet for healthcare.
Right.
That's her job. But
she'll never be without healthcare for the rest of her life because the Koch brothers will make sure that she's taken care of.
And we spent a lot of time on her a few years ago.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Because it was so, this telegenic young woman with her young husband and her kids and just all American gal who just loves her country so goddamn much. And her dad, who's a veteran, and it just, why can't we be free instead of like Russia, like the tyrant Obama wants us to
choice.
Be?
That gives us a $5,000 deductible every year for health insurance. Yeah. And we reach that deductible every year, which means under current law, our insurance company can actually cancel our policy because we meet our deductible.
But Katie Abram was the reason that she was so interesting was that she was part of the big lie of the Tea Party.
Yes.
That the Tea Party was this sudden uprush of grassroots, outraged average folks who'd never been involved in politics, never voted before, never even paid attention to anything before. But suddenly, miraculously, on January 20th, 2009, suddenly the horrors that were being inflicted upon them became clear, and the scales fell from their eyes, and they suddenly got involved in their government and then realized how bad and mean everything was and what a tyranny it was. So this woman, and of course you go to her backstory, it's all bullshit.
Well, yeah, she was actually a 9/12 organizer in her community. She did all kinds of emails on behalf of Glenn Beck, not paid, you know, but don't tell me that she wasn't involved politically because she was sending out emails and setting up meetings for 9/12.
Well, the point I think you and I originally made was going just by her interview, her very nice interview, Lawrence O'Donnell did a very good job interviewing her, which is back when she debated the war in the Middle East.
Yeah.
She couldn't distinguish between the first Gulf War and the second Gulf War.
We've always been at war.
and it was, understand, she really, and she said she used to debate politics with her friends, and so she was politically aware. But if you took her at her word, she slept through
9/11. She slept through 9/11.
She slept through Iran-Contra.
Yeah.
She slept through the first Gulf War. She slept through 9/11. She slept through the entire Bush administration. She slept through all of that deficits that the Reagans piled up and the Clintons paid down and the Bush piled back up again. She slept through all of that. And suddenly a black guy put his hand on the Bible and she woke right up. And America was on the verge of becoming a tyranny and we must do something about it right now. Well, I actually believe that might be true. Mm-hmm. Because I believe for people like her, having a white male Republican president is the default.
It's safety.
Yes. That's normal.
Then you don't have to think about it. Yep.
You don't have to worry about it. Because George Bush, this is a woman who was so terrified of deficits and socialism that she waited all the way through the Bush administration before she got excited about her government being broke.
Yeah, yeah.
Who cared so much about the military that she waited all the way through the Bush administration to get pissed that we were involved in foreign wars. So obviously she's some sort of pathological liar. Mm-hmm. But whether she is pathologically lying to herself or to everyone else or both, I don't know. But what was clear to us, what was so crystal clear is these people really do believe that they're the vanguard of a movement to take on a problem that happened in 2009.
Yeah.
And the reason they believe that, the reason they're so fervent about that, is A, because they have a shitload of Koch brothers money behind them, and they have an entire news network that's willing to tell them that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so terrified of anyone digging into their past and forcing them to say, wait a minute, you sat through the entire fucking Bush administration and didn't care and didn't give a shit. Suddenly, the only time you started caring about deficits was in January 2009. Really? And no one's ever going to ask them that question because they stay the hell away from people who will ask them that question. But the reason she was so fascinating was she was such a perfect little virus sample of this really deeply fascistic movement.
Well, and that was the point that she had, you know, the Puff interview with Hannity, but she did go on Hardball with Lawrence O'Donnell.
Yep.
And Lawrence did ask her, you know, in a very kind way. So you didn't get involved with 9/11. You didn't get involved during the wars.
Right.
What was it that made you get involved now? And she said, I didn't care.
Right.
I guess I didn't care because, you know, it seems like we've always been involved in some sort of war or conflict.
Right.
So, and I trusted my government. She said that, those things.
Right up until the black guy became president, she trusted her government.
She didn't have to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was clearly
the things that she didn't have to say.
Right.
I wanted to bring up, too, just something very tribal about this whole thing with the... Maybe I don't even need to say this. The scary black man president and all these white women being frightened of him.
Yeah.
And how Birth of a Nation this whole thing is.
Yeah.
And I'm really wondering, I don't blame Obama for being this polarizing because we just have so much racist shit as a country that we still have to heal from.
It's built in.
It's built into the DNA of our nation that we still have to atone for slavery. But what happens when Obama is no longer president? We know that the African-American voters that turned out for him in Florida 13 didn't turn out this week.
Right.
And I wonder which group. Will it be the enthusiastic African-American support for Obama that fades away faster? Or will it be the Katie Abrams who go back into their Barca lounger and decide, well, I don't have to care about politics anymore because now maybe that won't happen if Hillary is elected because we know there's a special brand of Hillary hate that will feed right into whatever, you know, keep the Koch brothers will work very hard to keep Katie Abrams terrified and awake to politics.
Well, part of the I didn't really think about this until you mentioned it just now. Mm-hmm. But part of the demographic problem with the electorate that Republicans are facing is that Barack Obama's a young man.
Yeah.
And he ain't going anywhere.
Well, and the between two fern things to me really underlined the demographic and generational difference between not only Barack Obama and Bill O'Reilly, which, you know, there's a gulf of years there, but the fact that the boomers are always electing senators that are older than they are, to the extent that the average age of the Senate is like 128 now or something like that.
The joke goes the average age of the Fox viewer is dead. So. Yeah.
And John McCain is perennially older than
everybody.
Than the Arizona voter. Well, you know, the retirees that vote for him are young, can feel young because they're voting for an older senator.
I mean a very specific kind of demographic.
Okay.
Barack Obama, when he leaves the presidency. Now, imagine, remember, Bill Clinton, when he left the presidency, had just been impeached. Yep. And yet his popularity as a former president, when people look back on it and sort of get out of that feverish moment and say, well, you know what? Maybe he didn't do so bad. Mm-hmm. If you have the power to sort of imagine yourself in 2017, 2016, 2018, looking back on Barack Obama and seeing sort of with the lens of history exactly how psychotic and mm-hmm. vicious and destructive the Republican Party was, mm-hmm. and how calm and even-tempered and not, you know, nutty and essentially very focused on the two or three things he wanted to get done, he was able to be. Mm-hmm. I believe history will judge him to be a remarkable president. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, we can argue about his foreign policy and drones and a bunch of other things and his disappointments and letdowns. And I will agree with 80% of it. But history will judge Barack Obama to be a remarkable president mm-hmm. because he didn't just nuke Congress. You know, he didn't
take the bait. He didn't take the bait.
He tried as hard as any human being could possibly try to make it work with an essentially psychotic opposition. And then he finally just folded up his tent and said, we can't do it. I'll do what I can do over here. But the problem, he has never said this, but he will once he leaves office. Mm-hmm. The problem was those people.
Yeah.
And he's going to be in his 50s when he leaves.
I know.
So what Clinton could do now in going to the states where Bill Clinton was popular as president, his popularity just kept going up and up and up and up. Barack Obama's popularity once he leaves office is going to go up and yeah. up and up. Yeah. And he will be able to go to Florida and he will be able to go to yeah. South Carolina. Yep. And he will be yep. that guy for the Democratic Party for 30 years if yeah. he wants to be.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
And he can be
I think he'll draw a crowd.
Yeah.
Even though he's not president no more.
he could be the well, gray is not right, but the sort of biracial eminence, if you
yeah.
will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of the Democratic Party for a really long time. Mm-hmm. He didn't lose his reelection, which means he's not going to be sort of shunted to the side like Jimmy Carter, and I think right. very unfairly. Mm-hmm. But he gets to be the two-term president who faced down the least competent, most lunatic, most vicious, most fucking nuts and irresponsible mm-hmm. Republican Party in American history.
Yep.
And did it
in terms of actual elected officials.
Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's what he's going to be forever.
Mm-hmm.
Unless something mm-hmm. completely fucking crazy happens in the next couple, 3 years, that's who he's going to be. And that guy can take that legacy to any Southern state and get the vote out.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that's
so true.
I hope that's what he decides to do with his time and energy. I really do.
I hope President Hillary Clinton appoints him to the Supreme Court. But I
yeah, that too. That yeah. too. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Hey, Clarence, how you doing? All right.
But between now and then, there is a definite problem in how do you energize the midterm voter?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Brother Charlie Pierce and I had a little back and forth about that. Not personally. He doesn't.
On the Twitter?
Not on the Twitter. He wrote a column about, he listed off several of the people who would become Senate.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Chair people.
I saw that. If the Republicans take over the Senate. Yes.
And it was, you know, what do you have to do to get.
Going to have an intelligence committee run by Beauregard, really? Yeah.
And Jim Inhofe is going to be in charge of anything? Are you insane?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's who's lined up to run the Senate if they win. And his argument was, whatever your grief is, here's a red hot poker up your ass.
Yeah,
you got to get out there. And and my response to him was, don't take it up with me, man. And don't yell at the youth of America. Why don't you take it up with the people who keep insisting that there's absolutely no difference between the parties, that you should just withhold your vote and punish Democrats, and that there's absolutely – that they're horrid, they're awful, and the only reason Democrats win is because they convince you that they're marginally less awful than Republicans, which makes you their slave. And that person is Glenn Greenwald.
Yeah.
So why don't you take it up with him? Because that is so far above my pay grade now. I don't want to spend any time or effort on it again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there really are people out there who have a dedicated following of thousands and thousands of people who have access to big megaphones who are actively trying to get Republicans elected by getting Democrats to step aside and be uninvolved and be apathetic and be disinterested. If you're really interested in fixing that, Charlie, you've got a magazine. I don't. You're on television. I'm not. Why don't you go after the people who own those megaphones? That would be an interesting story. That would be an interesting debate I would love to see on my liberal TV.
We have to move along because we are at 60 minutes.
I know.
As of now. And I really want to talk about the power of utopian ideals, if any.
Yeah. Well,
first of all, as a side issue, we've discovered this week that the European Union wants to ban the names Parmesan and Feta uh-huh. on cheese made in the United States. And I just want the European Union to know that In our house, we call it sprinkle cheese. Mm-hmm. Parmesan is called sprinkle cheese.
Yeah, so don't worry about it.
Feta is called stinky salad cheese. So you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Also, pick up a copy of The Mouse That Roared, because
yes.
It's a good book.
Yeah. We're going to read a letter from Andrew, and he sent this intentionally to me as a science fiction university, but his issues are so political that I really wanted to bring it to the front of the podcast. Right. I also wanted to mention, in light of Andrew's letter, that there is yet another, and I know they put these out every year because it's part of what they have to do, but the Congressional Progressive Caucus has released yet another budget plan. They've had the people's budget, they've had the back-to-work budget, and they've had the budget for all, and now they have the better-off budget.
Okay.
And, you know, all four of these budgets are awesome and have lots to for us to put on a wish list. You know, that you keep bringing up these wish lists, and why do we do that? Andrew asked about solutions in science fiction that could cure our dysfunctional government.
Sure.
And he has three references to science fiction books, TV, and movies. And he wanted to put these in the form of a question, but I think just talking about them is a better way to go about getting to the political angle of it. He talks about the Dead Past solution. The Dead Past is an Asimov short story in which a chronoscope is invented that can look at any time, place in history, including a politician's office 2 minutes ago. Could they remain as corrupt as they are if everyone knew all their secrets and who was handling money or handling them under the table? Then he has the Trenzalore solution, which is Doctor Who, Middlechild's favorite doctor, the 11th Doctor. On the fields of Trenzalore on the fall of the 11th, no living creature can speak falsely or fail to answer. What if there was some way to make sure anyone in Congress had no choice but to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? They'd all quit. And finally, Andrew brings up the Blade Runner solution. Do congressmen dream of electric sheep dip? It's a Philip K. Dick story, of course.
Uh-huh.
The key word here is empathy. What would happen to our legislators if they could actually empathize with the people their decisions affected? Or even better, what if they were forced to feel every joy or sorrow caused by their votes? They might make more compassionate decisions if they worried they would have to feel $40 billion worth of other people's hunger from cutting food stamps. So, you know, these are utopian solutions.
And they're thought experiments, as is the better off budget. Yeah, they're thought experiments. Mm-hmm. What would happen if? What would happen if? That's the core science fiction question is what if?
And you had some other science fiction stories listed.
Yeah.
That you thought pertained to this.
Just off the top of my head,
mm-hmm.
that you can perform the same thought experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur Clarke in Childhood's End, the aliens have arrived. And they're kind of had it with people, the human race. It's time for the human race to grow up. So one of the things they do to get rid of, to empathize people is, for example, everyone at a bullfight suddenly starts feeling what the bull is feeling.
Oh, wow.
So it's forcing the shoe on the other foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they got rid of tyrants by putting a little voice in their ear that never stopped talking.
Mm-hmm.
Little tiny solutions. You can stop the pain by stopping the bullfighting.
Yeah.
Robert Heinlein was like an idea factory. He actually published a book on A Guide to Elections. He sort of Take Back Your Government kind of book from the 60s. And some of them were crazy and some of them were good. And I've actually given that book away to friends as just sort of like, here's a way to actually, you have to understand how politics works, how electoral politics works, how precincts work, how vote counting works, how judges work. You got to understand all that if you want to change anything, because if you don't get it, you don't know how the machine works, you're never going to get the results you want. You're still not going to get the results you want, but you're screwed if you don't understand it at all. And Heinlein has lots of ideas about government, some of which are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that there should be a third house of Congress that does nothing but repeal bills. and you actually, I think, only have to have one third majority. Because if you can't get a third of the people to agree that something is good, then it's probably crap. Well, yeah, except that's what we have now.
Yeah.
We have a third of the population essentially holding the rest of us hostage to their crazy ideas. So, and refusing to compromise. But what would happen if you had to solve a quadratic equation before the voting booth would work?
I could do it.
Yeah, well, that's the idea was to sort people out who shouldn't be in the polling in the electorate at all without actually having poll taxes or any other racist things like that. One idea is to have a government where only veterans can vote,
wow.
Which is kind of this is Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
It's after, and all of this sort of conveniently happens after some tremendous catastrophe where government has to reform itself. So we're going to try something new this time. So you get to sort of wipe the slate clean and start over. And this time it was after World War III. You know, veterans trusted each other a little bit, didn't trust anybody else. They had guns. They basically said, you know what? Only we get to decide. Mm-hmm. You can own property. You can run corporations. You can become rich. But you don't get to vote unless you serve in the military in some capacity, whether it's, you know, doing public service or nursing or whatever. But you have to be 2 years of public service or you don't get to vote. So there's a whole subgenre of ideas of how to run things, good and bad. The Dune has essentially a theocracy run by great houses and powered by access to the one indispensable natural resource in the universe. And the people who are running the theocracy sort of know it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of know the levers they're pulling, but it's effective. As a method of controlling a large number of people over a great distance, theocracy works really well. But mm-hmm. you eventually mm-hmm. have to put the priest hat on. There's even a portion in Asimov's Foundation trilogy where, to give nothing away, the Foundation becomes a church.
Hmm.
Remember that?
Yes, I do.
It becomes a religion because that's the best way to sort of get it out to people without having to give all the technical secrets away.
Mm-hmm. So they had to have faith in whatever that technology was. Right, right.
But the technology always worked.
Yeah.
You know, their god was the electric light, the atomic power, which always worked. Asimov also said, you know, what happens when elections become so accurate, you only need one voter. What happens?
And there was
then?
A movie with Kevin Costner along those lines, too. Yeah.
There was.
Yeah.
There's a I can't remember the name of the story, but it was by Brian Aldiss. I think it was by Brian Aldiss, a collection of his short stories, a planet that humans have destroyed, have conquered by consuming the atmosphere.
Hmm.
And the last survivors of the civilization that we are destroying leave behind a doomsday weapon.
Hmm.
They essentially said, if you want to keep the planet, you won. You get to keep it. But if you want to keep it, one of you has to step up right now and stick your head in a box that will kill you. You have to be willing to sacrifice yourself for your civilization. If you're not, then we'll blow the place up and screw you people. So it's forcing leaders to make life or death decisions that they personally have to pay for.
Yep.
That's a big theme in science fiction. The Moon is a Harsh Mistress is essentially libertarian paradise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Constructed on Australian penal colony lines. Finally, corporations running things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Screw government. Yep. Let corporations do it. Snow Crash, I think, had a place called Fedland.
Oh, wow.
Which is where the last of the federal government was kept in kind of a little enclosure. And you had people who lived there, and they were miserable, and they had to have they had no privacy, and had to take drug tests all the time. And it was kept sort of as a relic of the past. But corporations ran everything else. Space merchants, corporations ran
mm-hmm.
everything.
Mm-hmm.
Neuromancer was essentially, government was almost non-existent, and corporations ran the world. So there are lots of methods of organization, and science fiction is a good vehicle for saying, what if we made our elected officials do A, B, and C? And I think that the most humane thing is essentially the United States Constitution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Making each branch answerable to each other, keeping power in check. This is where the CIA spying on the Senate is truly a constitutional crisis.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
But keeping everyone in check to everyone else and keeping the entire system answerable to the people every 2 or 4 or 6 years. The problem with that is it's been pushed aside by money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we said that before. Money, yep. Money being speech makes money the only speech.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so the factor, I mean, the founders were terrified of inherited wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have created mm-hmm. is an institution that worships inherited wealth in the form of corporations and lets them have staggering amounts of unchecked power in our society. And now they literally are able to run our government.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that every person who signed the Declaration of Independence was terrified that would be allowed to happen. So you break power up. You break it up as small as you can, and you keep it answerable to each other. You keep everything balanced against each other.
And while that battle is going on,
uh-huh.
you keep ideas alive.
Yes.
And I really think that's why we need to do intellectual exercises like science fiction and writing and better off budgets is to keep these ideas and these people that these budgets represent in the public discussion.
Well, can I give you a really good and incredibly depressing example of that?
Sure.
Really quick. For the purpose of a post I'm doing today, I did a brief review of the 1980 debate between John Anderson and Ronald Reagan.
And Jimmy Carter was running also, and he did not attend the debate with John Anderson.
He didn't want to share the stage with an independent. Now, John Anderson got 6 million votes, one of which was mine. Mm-hmm. And he was all in favor of conservation, fiscal prudence. He was in favor of commuters, you know, reducing the use of cars, the fact that we're running out of energy, we're running out of oil, we have to have light rail systems. The infrastructure of our cities is collapsing. We need to rebuild it. John Anderson was saying all this in 1980. What was Reagan saying? Reagan was saying, as an example of the bold new ideas he was going to bring to Washington, every problem is caused by the government. Every problem is caused by overregulation. Every problem is caused by too many taxes. We're going to have a balanced budget by 1983, by God, because everything, if we just deregulate everything and turn everything loose, then eventually something magic pirates will show up and we'll all be rich. And freedom, liberty, and we should drill everywhere because there's enough oil on Earth to last everybody. And if we just use the natural resources we have, the government's withholding all this land that we could be using, et cetera, et cetera. It is remarkable how identical Reagan's radical theories of government that he was running on in 1980 parallel exactly what you'll hear on any hour of the Glenn Beck Show, any hour of Rush Limbaugh, any hour of Sean Hannity 30-odd years later. And that's the power of ideas.
And let's not forget that these are the ideas that George H.W. Bush during the primaries called voodoo economics.
Yeah, he mocked them.
Yep.
So bad ideas have power. But mm-hmm. but because they capture your imagination, the Ronald Reagan sold a generation of dopes, a theory of government
that was very flattering to them.
Yes. And
that's the important thing. Yes.
It promised them that they would never have to. It was all ouchless. You could just deregulate, cut taxes, and everybody would get rich.
We're going to get the government off of your back.
Out of your way. Yeah. This was the sort of the death of the last branch of the hippie movement, which turned into the self-improvement movement, mm-hmm. which turned into the get everyone out of my way, me movement.
Right.
Not all hippies did that, but a substantial fraction of them did. But this is just to demonstrate that Reagan was preaching this Randite, radical, right-wing doctrine of complete destruction of the government, sweeping it entirely aside, and then somehow everything would work out great, which is a wonderful fairy tale. We've had 30-plus years of hard, painful, real-world testing of that theory, and there's no conclusion you can reach other than it's been a spectacular failure. And yet, tens of millions of Americans still believe it, still watch Fox News, still listen to Rush Limbaugh, and still believe that we just didn't go far enough. That's the power of ideas. You have to know what you believe in. Reagan believed in a lot of horrible shit, but he believed it. Mm-hmm. And 30 years later, they still believe it. Liberals, Democrats, need to have those kind of long-range, big-thinking ideas mm-hmm. to galvanize people and express to them. Because Reagan could go to any subject and go back to his ideology and speak
right.
to that subject
exactly.
out of his core beliefs.
Keith Ellison understands.
Yes,
he continually pushes for these progressive ideals, regardless of whether they have a chance or not in quote-unquote reality. Yeah.
And what my wife always says is clean air, clean water.
Clean water.
Full
clean land.
Mm-hmm.
Safe food. Jobs. Yep.
And that's it.
That's what you're for. And I wanted to read this quote. I know a lot of people have shared this around Facebook and other places. An article called The Bright Green City in Sun Magazine by Alex Steffen, when he wrote, "Optimism is a political act. Those who benefit from the status quo are perfectly happy for us to think nothing is going to get any better. In fact, these days, cynicism is obedience."
Wow.
And I would add to the Koch brothers.
Would you send me that quote? Because I don't need to put that. I need to post that over my comment section.
Yeah. Cynicism is obedience.
Absolutely. About a third of my comments are from people who tell me that it's all useless. Both sides are fucked. Everyone's evil. There's no point in going on. And it always.
I will say, just in response again to Florida 13, which lost this week, cynicism, apathy, purity tests, a belief that nothing's going to get any better. On the part of liberals who think that makes them sound intelligent, that's what gets Republicans elected.
Yeah.
Because Republicans going to the polls think they're doing something good.
And if I may quote True Detective, honey.
Sure.
It directly related to that. Mm-hmm. Rust Cole, who expounded rather poetically about the uselessness of life and the ignorance of the religious and how pointless it all was. And his partner pointed out, for someone who doesn't give a damn, you sure are invested in this point of view. You sure do talk about it a lot. And it always, and that's not a direct quote, but it's nearly direct. What always fascinates me with people who are deeply, bitterly cynical, and just fuck both sides. Everything's awful. There's not a dime's worth of difference between anybody. Anybody who thinks otherwise is foolish. People who just sort of float, as I say, dirigibly above all human concerns and sneer at everybody for caring about anything because only a complete crash and destruction of the system will ever fix anything. Okay, you can believe that. That's fine. But why are you so deeply, passionately invested in making that point over and over and over again in my fucking comment section?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you camp out in blogs and say the same fucking cynical thing day after day, week after? That takes an enormous amount of emotional energy for someone who doesn't care. Here's a thought. Why don't you go away and not care quietly by yourself in the corner, since by your own logic, it doesn't make any difference. So why don't you go over there and not make a difference and leave the rest of us lunatic, Pollyannish, hopeful optimists to pursue our delusions in peace? Because what does it matter to you? What do you care? You get nothing out of it. Everything's fucked anyway. So go off and go fishing and leave the rest of us alone.
I have an idea, too, about True Detective.
Uh-huh.
True Detective Season 2.
Yeah.
Rand Paul and Marco Rubio.
Oh, yeah.
And they're in the bayou. They see a drunk woman laughing against a tree in the bayou. And uh-huh. Rand Paul pulls out his binder and starts drawing a picture of Aqua Buddha.
Uh-huh. And they start getting references in everyone's to this Ayn Rand character. She has big green ears and believes in deregulation. I thought she was just a myth. And this place called Galt Gulch, where it don't make no sense. We thought it was just some hallucinogenic side effect of PCP and LSD. But no, it's a religion where a bunch of rich people get together and fuck the economy. Yeah.
It took us 4 years to get him over to the House.
And then it took him 2 years to get him into the Senate.
Yeah, that's what, he's always talking about Aqua Buddha and his daddy.
He rides a lawnmower in a flat circle around.
He sure does.
Sure does.
Actually, that's about what I would consider Marco Rubio's IQ qualifications to do.
Yeah.
I think he would be capable of riding a lawnmower in a round.
But he can't do much of a James Mason impersonation.
Spoilers.
Well, meaningless spoilers. They tell you nothing about anything. So I don't feel bad about that.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Jazz. Guess what, Driftglass? She likes to lick plastic. We have one of those, too.
Yeah, we have at least one of those.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can write to both of us and send us a contribution. We have gotten a number of contributions, delayed contributions of $4 this week, $1 for each year we have been podcasting.
Yeah.
Driftglass, I wanted you to know that. We got a number of $4 donations, and a couple of them said, yeah, got my tax return. Here's your $4. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. We really appreciate it, and it makes a difference. And so feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And be aware, if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
You know, Blue Gal, the internet kitties are tired of all this nonsense. They've decided to give up sacrifice for Lent.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
So we're going to do Science Fiction University. This is another audio Science Fiction University from our friend at Magnolia ePublishing.
Yes.
Here's the sound.
Steve Austin, a man barely alive. But we can rebuild
him. $60 man, you're right.
We have the technology. Now that's basically the price of a hip replacement and a transplant.
That's true.
In American medical system. But yeah, that was the And the reason I remember that is, of course, my brother and I would make that noise when we slow motion jumped over the footstool and wrestled each other. Everybody made that noise. Are you kidding me? That was the noise of my childhood.
$6 million is 1,666,666 and 2/3 penis pumps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think of all the penis pumps you could buy today. Jeez. Medicare could buy.
He wasn't bionically smart, but he was bionic curious. So.
Number two.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Everyone knows that.
Yes. These are very easy, these original ones.
Yeah, that's the sound of a phaser. Again, that's the pew-pew-pew noise that we would try to make in lieu of actual gunfire, because that was the cowboys and Indians noises of our childhood.
Yeah, yeah, really. And which one of you two boys played the evil villain, and which one of you played Mr. Spock?
I don't have to ask that question.
You were Spock.
I was always Spock. Yeah. I always loved Spock. I thought Spock was incredibly cool from the first time I saw him.
Me too.
All deal. Right. Yeah. TARDIS with the parking brake on.
That's right. Good.
It's not supposed to make that noise, which I thought was a wonderful little throw.
Middle child would be very proud of you.
Yes.
Middle child, by the way, whose Skype status right now says, not doing homework never killed anyone.
Yeah.
We're kind of having a bit of a challenge with her.
Not yet, but we're working on it. Who has Doctor Who everything.
And, oh, my gosh.
And is an aficionado.
She does not go to school anymore without a Doctor Who shirt on. Eight or nine of them.
Doctor Who pencil, Doctor Who socks, or post-it notes, or whatnot. Yep.
Well, it's just like me in knitting. When people find out that that's what you like, and it's out there and available and reasonably inexpensive to get, you know, birthdays, Christmas, whatever. She loves them. So Doctor Who shirts are always a good gift. All right, here come some harder ones.
Okay.
These next two are from the same source, but you've got to figure out what's going on.
All right. That was the sound that David Bowman, I think, Dave Bowman was stuck out in the pod without a helmet,
mm-hmm.
and he had to blow out the thing and shoot himself through the tunnel in a vacuum, essentially, to get back into the Discovery. And so that was the noise that it was making as that was happening.
They say the answer is arming the explosive bolts.
Yeah.
From 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, well, they don't.
Well, see, now I've given you the hint for the next one, but here it is.
Okay. All right. Yeah,
happening in this one?
Hal is killing the crew. Hal is turning off their life support and killing off the crew.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has to.
He has to.
To complete the mission.
Complete the mission, Dave.
Uh-huh.
I can't do that, Dave.
Sorry, Dave. Dave's not here, man.
Okay, this one is perhaps an engine of some kind. Why don't you listen to it?
All right. I have no idea. It sounds like a motorcycle, mm-hmm. so I'm not an engine aficionado, but it's so the only thing I can think of is Blade Runner, but I don't think Decker ever rode a motorcycle, so I don't know why that's coming.
Didn't the captain from the new Battlestar Galactica play in Blade Runner?
Oh, yeah, that was Edward James Olmos.
A very young, thin Edward James Olmos was the police detective who was going after Decker, right?
Yeah, he was also a Blade Runner, I believe.
Didn't he ride a motorcycle?
That's a good question. I don't remember. I don't remember either. If that were, in fact, the correct answer.
Well, anyway, it's not Blade Runner anyway. It's Mad Max.
Yeah, it's a mechanical sound, so it's something gas.
It's Mad Max. It's the police interceptor engine last of the V8s.
Oh, cool.
From Mad Max. All right.
I know where you can get 20 of those for $300.
Oh, okay.
At the city auction.
You are constantly now shopping the city auction.
I'm just
vans for me.
And I'm just checking it out. Because we're looking to replace our van, that is delightful.
We're going to buy a former rental car, I think, is what we're going to do.
But our budget restrictions are very severe, as you might imagine.
Well, yeah, and we can get a cargo van with like a cage behind the driver
for
$1,000 from the city of Springfield.
I totally want that. I want the youngest child.
Kids in the back.
What is it? It smells like dog. Well, you know. That's just the way it goes. You were a bad person.
We put a futon in the back. We paint Love Machine on the side, and it's...
Toss the keys to the teenage boy and say,
"Happy." God.
Wow, chicken. You got to buy your own shag rug. That's on you, but everything else will...
I don't know if I should say this on the podcast. You tell me if I should say this on the podcast.
Uh-huh.
It might just be way too racist, but I did...
Yeah.
I did... I did discover that Junior Dude is definitely... falling right into the cracks of nerd geekdom when he told me the other day that he really thinks he'd like to have an Asian girlfriend.
Yeah, well, he doesn't know what he knows. He's accessorizing based on comic books.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that's fine. If he wants to date Batgirl, that's fine.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's
okay. He said that the other day and I was like, what?
I'm not saying that.
No, I don't care who you date, but yeah, you're right. It's like, who do I want on my arm as candy
when I'm
and it's
saving
a hot, hot, hot.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's you know, it's I'm not saying that Barbie, everything from Barbie to comic books don't influence people in a bad or good way. I'm just saying that's what's going on.
That's what's going on with 15-year-old. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a hard one.
All right.
Apparently.
That would be the sound of the Krell machine doing its Krell thang.
What did the Krell thang do? First of all, what movie is it from?
This is from, hold on a second. The reason that my brain is stalling is I blew this at a trivia contest. I kept insisting that it was Forbidden Planet, Forbidden Planet, Forbidden Planet, when it was, in fact, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
But this is Forbidden Planet.
This is Forbidden Planet. And
this is Forbidden Planet.
The Krell were the super intelligent beings of this planet who mysteriously disappeared and or destroyed themselves, leaving behind an IQ enhancing machine.
Oh.
Make
all the girlfriends Asian, is what you're telling
exactly.
me.
Exactly. It would crank your brain power up so our castaways find living humans who are with remarkable machines, etc. But there's a monster, from the id, that they forgot that your subconscious is also made, you know, made manifest and made powerful by this machine. And that's the Krell. Yeah.
All right. The next one.
I don't know what this one is. I thought it might be Roger Rabbit.
Roger Rabbit.
It's got that ricochet sound to it.
Yeah.
Physical. It feels like a physical thing. It's very familiar, but I can't quite place it.
It is the robot's eye laser from The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
Know that.
Okay.
That would be not the robot. That would be Klaatu. Not Veronicto. So it's
now here's a countdown one.
11, 10, 9. Self destruct has been canceled.
Yeah, that's the sound of the self-destruct mechanism in the Andromeda Strain. A very fine, underrated movie. Counting down. The problem with that movie, they had people with keys that could turn it off, and the site was still under construction, so some of the keypads didn't work.
Mm.
So this guy is running through it's a 30-year-old movie. I hope I'm not spoiling it for anybody. But our hero has to climb through the cylinder, the central column of the wildfire, I think it was called, the underground facility, where they're trying to figure out a cure for this extraterrestrial disease. And it keeps getting zapped by lasers because the whole idea is you don't want anything escaping from this facility because, you know, bad things happen. So,
I got news for you, Driftglass.
Uh-huh.
It's 45 years old, not 30.
Okay, that's fine.
1969, and what does it have in common with Day the Earth Stood Still?
The Day the Earth Stood Still and
Andromeda Strain.
It's not the same writer.
No. Michael Crichton wrote.
Michael Crichton wrote the Andromeda Strain.
Right.
I'd have to go with director.
Yeah, same director.
Oh, okay.
Robert Wise.
Oh, okay. I never would have gotten it right, but what else could it be?
Day of the Earth Stood Still is 1951, and Andromeda Strain is 69. So that gives you kind of an interesting frame around how film changed, let alone...
If you haven't seen them, I would recommend them both.
Yeah, watch them, maybe even back to back.
Yeah. I mean, the latter, just in terms of scientific error and the way the government screws up and just... I mean, there's the science is now sort of flaky, but the whole idea of it and these stupid little mistakes that end catastrophically because people are people is really timeless and a pretty good movie.
All right, number 11.
It's obviously a computer because computers are supposed to make that sort of sound. But it's I would go with Colossus, the Forbin Project.
Oh, you know, I really like that movie. That's a good movie.
Yeah.
But that's not it. It's Alien.
Oh,
the original Alien. And it is a computer booting up.
Yeah.
The Nostromo's computer powering up.
Because tubes and
yeah, and stuff. Right.
So clankety clankety clank when the computer powers up. Mine makes that noise, but it's not supposed to.
All right, there's two more. Number 12.
I have no idea. I'm guessing nothing because I have no idea. It's something. It's an acceleration of some kind. That's obviously there, but I don't know what it is.
This is the jump to light speed from the Star Wars spoof Hardware Wars, a short film parody from 1978.
Oh, bite me. Okay, why not? I just put in that. That's the whizzing sound for the Wizard of Speed and Time. I've seen it at a 1988 science fiction convention.
Yeah. All right. You only watched it at the 1978 Comic-Con, right? Yeah.
No, that would be science fiction convention. Comic-Cons are not science fiction conventions.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Right.
But you're going to take Junior Dude to a Comic-Con one of these days.
I am one of these days. I sure am.
He's going to meet a girlfriend there.
No, he's not. He's going to meet a bunch of old men who want an autograph the book.
Oh, but at the booth. There'll be potential girlfriends at the booth.
And there will be members of his tribe will be there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I could just turn him loose and pick him up 2 days later.
Yeah. I know I haven't slept for 2 days, but I've drunk a lot of Mountain Dew.
It's awesome.
Awesome. All right. Last one.
Just from that swear word at the end, I'm going to guess somebody fired something and it missed or blew up something real big that shouldn't have. So I'm going to go with, I don't know, maybe Buckaroo Banzai or...
Oh, that's a good guess. No, it's the space laser firing at Tetsuo from Akira.
Oh,
1988
yeah.
Japanese animated cyberpunk action film.
Well, that was my second choice.
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Wasn't even close. Well, that was really good. That was.
Yeah, thank you to our friend at Magnolia ePublishing. We love you, and we'll be doing more of these. We have one more to do, and we'll be doing more of these in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.